Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
The vast majority of people like a tipple every now and then, but of course some of us are in denial or totally unaware that we have seriously problematic drinking issues. Now, Corkman Tadhg Hickey is a successful comedian, an actor and a writer. And through his new book, he reveals the levels of self-deception, let's say, he went to before having to face the realities of his life-threatening addiction before it was actually too late. He's in the studio now and said to me off air, "Keep it light, Jen." No chance of that intro.
That was chilling.
But isn't it amazing? You can laugh about it now.
Yeah.
How long are you sober?
8.5 years now.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Although I'd say 8.5 years not drinking and then sober is a kind of a different thing. Sober is kind of like something that you need to aspire to, like kind of more sane, kind of mentally, mental stability. Yeah.
And we also said, is it a little, obviously time is great, but is it a little easier in this day and age? Because we were just talking about it on the show a couple of days ago. People are sober curious.
Mm.
And I mean, drink free, curious. Having a life without drink.
Yeah.
Curious.
It's so much easier as you get older, I find. Because like I'm 40 now, right?
Okay.
I'm
actually 40. Was that hard to say?
I'm actually 41.
Are
I
you?
Just tried to lie on air. Look, I'm 39 because I'm taking 2 years off for COVID.
Yes, okay.
But what I'm finding is my friends who don't have drink problems at all are stopping drinking because they can't take the hangovers anymore.
Hmm.
And I have to say that's a little bit enjoyable. As you're seeing people falling off as you go along. But no, I think the culture is slowly changing. Like I was saying to you off air as well that like I have a 19-year-old daughter and I just noticed that they're not as obsessed with drink as we were. It's weird in such
a
short space
of time.
Yeah.
You see them in the gym in the afternoon, all these 16, 17-year-old lads in the gym.
Or they go to cafes as well. They go to, they kind of hang out and drink coffee. They like coffee and stuff. And I didn't know what coffee was, you know, because like when we were in school, or I speak for myself, we were just obsessed with the idea of going drinking, like just getting drinking from about 13 on. It was just an obsession. So I think that's waning a little bit. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. Like I'm not anti-drink, you know what I mean? I'm not like get rid of drink, it's evil. It was just me and drink combined.
Sure.
We're a deadly duo.
Sure, sure. Tell us about the experience of your first sip of cider.
So I can remember it still so clearly, and that's why it's a big part of the book, because it was just a transformative experience. I went from being this kind of nerdy, shy, self-conscious, and then really anxious little boy as well. Like really anxious, but I suppose I wouldn't have called it anxiety at the time because it wasn't a word.
No.
Like nobody said that word then. And suddenly I took this drink and it kind of equalized all that stuff, but then it brought me onto this new level completely. Like I transcended into what felt like a superhero because I was totally shy with girls. I'd never get into a fight. And in the one night, in the space of 3 or 4 cans, I was like taking on people in Sir Henry's, like kissing other people's girlfriends. And it was amazing. Like, I'm not saying all those behaviors are right and proper for the rest of your life, but when you're a nerdy little uncomfortable guy and you take a couple of cheap cans from the off license and you become this larger than life figure, it's so addictive. And I think that's the transformation is almost the most addictive part of it rather than the substance.
Now, in the book is dedicated to your late mother, which says, and I quote, "To Mam, the cure and the cause." What do you mean by that?
So, yeah, I feel like on one very basic reductive level, she is the cause because she was anxious and I'm sure she was an anxious kid and I was anxious and I was an anxious kid. And we both found alcohol eventually to try and deal with being an anxious person in the world. Not so much the world, but like our own prism of anxiety through which we viewed the world, I think. So if I was to blame her, which I don't anymore, but I certainly did in my own drinking, then she would have been the cause. She's the cure, I think, because I got to know her through the writing of the book and I got to really feel serious compassion for her and love her, like in a way that I hadn't done before. And I also feel like in tracing back the story of her and me as a kid, I kind of came to my own epiphanies and my own kind of healing. So it was by going back and spending time with her, kind of metaphorically, I suppose, that I got a lot of peace for myself and compassion for her. So yeah.
You could probably understand her a little better.
Totally, yeah. Because like when you're young and you're angry with your parents, I find most people are like this. You're just like, why are they doing this to me? Like, why are they ruining my life?
Mm-hmm.
But as you get a bit older and you go through your own stuff, you kind of go, oh, look, she was just scared. You know, that's what it comes down to. She was scared and I was scared.
Sadly, your dad passed away in your teens. Is that when your drinking kind of spiraled out of control?
Big time.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
I think, you know, my dad was like this figure of authority. He didn't have to do that much. He was just, you just didn't mess with him, you know. And I was kind of, in a healthy way, I think, a bit scared of him. So, for instance, I'd already started drinking, of course, by 18, but I was constantly hiding it from him. Because I didn't want him to be disappointed in me, especially like with other substances as well. You just didn't want to be a mess in front of him. But after he died, obviously, I was really, really close to him. But after he died, I just thought, well, he's gone now, so I'm just going to do whatever I want. I've been dealt a bad hand and I'm just going to do whatever I want. And that type of thinking is really bad for somebody with addiction issues, because then, you know, the world owes you everything.
By 2003, you say you were out of control. There are differing definitions of out of control. What was that for you?
I think it was like around that time where, like, the drinking at the start, I always had some semblance of, okay, this is a wild night, or I'm after going missing somewhere. I'm on holidays in Riga and I can't find my hotel, and it's all a bit of crack. But around that time, I kind of felt during the drinking binges, I didn't know how or when they would stop. You know, it felt like, and I know this probably sounds to people who don't have addiction issues, that it sounds like an abdication of responsibility or something, but you really would just pick up a drink like in that period. And you weren't sure when it would end. You didn't have any control anymore. So like in addiction, people call it the, you know, that you actually lose control. You don't have that power of control anymore.
So it would go on for days.
Could go on for days. Yeah.
Wow.
My body would rarely tell me to stop. I'd keep going. My body would be strong enough, but it would just be my mind. So I'd wake up and the panic would, it's almost like this kind of balancing act between panic and anxiety and the anesthetic for it. So sometimes you'd wake up and the panic would be so bad, you think, well, actually, if I drink more, it's going to make it worse.
Yeah.
Like underpinning all my addiction anyway is like anxiety. It's all anxiety it's rooted in. So it's a mental illness.
When did you discover that?
Oh, probably like, you know, six years into therapy. Yeah. At the time, you're just thinking, I feel weird. I can't talk about it. Give me a can. That's all that's going on in your head. I can't express it.
Or you say to someone, I feel weird. I don't want to talk about it. And they say, here's a can.
Exactly. Yeah.
You had a daughter when you were relatively young.
Yeah.
But even as a doting father, your relationship with drugs and alcohol, it didn't really change, did it?
It didn't. I found one of the most challenging things to realise as I was writing the book is that I had a lot of fads along the way. So like, you know, for a while I'd go running and then I'd go off drink. Or like I was doing quite well in college. So it's like, I won't drink for my finals and I'd get good results. And then I go on the lash for 2 months.
It's funny you should say that. Brian Penny, friend of the show, he's a neuroscientist,
yeah.
Dr. Brian Penny, when he was talking about his addiction, he said, I was a functional heroin addict. So
yeah.
He used to,
a
very different substance, but he used to like run on the treadmill, eat a bag of carrots and have a bag of smack after.
I get it.
And
yeah.
Did that. And it's kind of thinking, oh, I can
yeah.
do this is okay because I've had the carrots and my run and all of this.
I'd be lifting weights while I was drinking cans. Because like I'd be at home on day two of the binge kind of going like, well, this is probably going to end tomorrow or the day after. And then I got to go out and I've got to try and look good in the world. So I might as well do these weights, like kind of stumbling around the room. It's
you got a TV show, Tig.
Yeah, we did a kids TV show. Yeah.
And how was that time?
So the kids TV show was, I was still kind of half enjoying it, I think, in that period. Fast forward to when we got our own sitcom with RT and we started doing stuff with Cahoots. That was no longer any fun because I was then aware like people are around me as well needing me to get my, you know, shit together.
Mm-hmm.
So then it just became a kind of a thing of like feeling like you're letting other people down was horrific for me because I was so used to letting myself down. I'd gotten used to that. But with others around you, it started to become a bit of a chore.
Okay. So what happened in 2015 then that finally brought your drinking to an end?
I suppose it was a combination of things. The main thing I suppose to go back to my daughter, Aquiva, is I really realised that I couldn't really hide anymore, that I wasn't as good a father as I could be. I mean, I could dress it up any way I want, that when I was there, I was kind of like a good Disney dad. I'd bring her on holidays and I'd kind of get the right photos. But really, I wasn't there for the nitty gritty. But the main thing is because alcoholism is a mental illness, in my opinion, and also the opinion of the World Health Organization, so it's not just me.
Mm-hmm.
My mental illness got so bad, I couldn't take it anymore. Like the anxiety, the low mood, all the things that are part of the kind of tableau of alcoholism, they all got so bad. And then I realised whatever's going on with me right now, for the first time in my life, do you know what? A can isn't going to work. That was just like this like big dominant epiphany in my mind. And I felt like I was going to die without being so, without being kind of morbid about it. I felt like I was going to die.
Okay. So you got help. The big question, and I suppose what everybody wants to know, is you don't reach for the can anymore, but how do you deal with your anxiety?
Yeah, so the first thing you need to do, or sorry, the first thing I did, I'm not preaching at anyone, is, you know, get help from other alcoholics, because primarily you're addicted to a substance. That's the first thing, but that's only the first thing. Loads of help from other alcoholics, and then a slow process. You don't have to be as slow as I did it, but to get to the root of what caused that anxiety to begin with. So that was a long process that involved loads of help from other alcoholics, a spiritual aspect to it without a doubt, but also then a bit of psychotherapy. And kind of, as I said to you, like coming to terms with my mother in that relationship. So there's a lot in there. But what I would say is when you do get to the root of that, though, for me anyway, like life takes off. It's, you know, this, I really feel sorry for younger people who are struggling with addiction, because they think, particularly in Ireland, when you stop drinking, like we were talking about earlier, the crack's over. How am I going to go to Electric Picnic? How am I going to do your job? How are you going to do my job? Get up on stage?
How do I go to that wedding?
How do I
dance?
How do I fit in my family? Yep. You know, because we all relate to each other when we're drunk in the pub. But you can and you will, and it's great.
It's a great read. It's a great story.
Thank you.
Beautifully written. It's out now. Best luck in the future. Thank you for coming in and telling your story.
Can I quickly say...
I know, I could see you were dying to say something. Go on.
Get me plugging. So I'm in Liberty Hall tonight.
Oh, are you? Tonight? Yeah. Deadly.
Live stand-up tonight. And on Thursday night coming, I'm in the Opera House as well. And students who I love and I'm encouraging come to the gigs can get in for €10.
Deadly.
So tykicky.com.
If you're looking for something to do, Liberty Hall tonight. And where are you?
Opera House on Thursday.
Opera House on Thursday. And the book is A Portrait of the Piss Artist as a Young Man. It's by Tykicky. It's out now. Go and check it out. I just want to say, if you've been affected by any of the issues raised in our conversation, you can search RT Helplines for a number of useful resources and information. We'll be back right after this.
Jem Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.